morning. We would be one, say the words of one of our hymns, by Unitarian Samuel Wright. In fact, we Unitarians are one, in at least broad agreement on our seven principles, which grow out of our traditional six sources. One of our seven principles reflects the sense of the song we heard during the offering, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Another of our principles is acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. As you may know, Unitarians started as part of the Christian tradition and have more recently been significantly influenced by humanism. Unitarianism is a liberal religion that welcomes people who are looking for a religious or spiritual community that doesn't require them to believe what a court might call facts not in evidence. At the same time, one of our sources says that Unitarians are open to wisdom from the world's traditions, the world's religions. In this congregation, there are no doubt humanists, Buddhists, people from one of the three Levantine traditions, and of course, pagans of various sorts, from Hindus to pantheists to Wiccans. We are indeed a diverse lot, and yet we are one. According to Alicia Carpenter, the Unitarian who wrote the words to the hymn we sang earlier, we are one in the search for truth, one in the love that is the spirit of our church. Unity and diversity. Or as Spock might say, infinite diversity and infinite combination. Symbolized by the rainbow and our rainbow flag, which Unitarians have used for decades to celebrate our diversity, our many colors woven together into one beautiful banner. Acceptance of one another and encouragement, encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. There's a joke. Why did the Unitarian cross the road? To support the chicken in its search for its own path. At the same time that we accept one another and encourage one another to spiritual growth, one of our sources is humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. So how are we able to avoid idolatries and support each other's spiritual growth despite the fact that our various religious stories, stories of deities and miracles, perhaps, may be different or non-existent? Because most of us understand the word metaphor. From the Greek metapherein, a metaphor is a figure of speech that says that one thing is another different thing. This allows us to use fewer words and forces the reader or listener to find the similarities and extrapolate the meanings. An article in the journal Brain and Language from March of this year states the following. Aristotle concluded in the 4th century BC that the difference is but slight between similes and metaphors. After all, the metaphor, he's a bear in the morning, means the same as the simile, he's like a bear in the morning. Our brains apparently do not agree. Midori Shibata and colleagues at Hokkaido University in Japan asked 24 men and women to indicate, while in a functional MRI scanner, whether they could understand a series of metaphors or similes. Shibata's team found that there was an increase in activity in the medial frontal region when processing similes, whereas the right inferior frontal gyrus was more active for metaphors. The team next hopes to use EEG to put these figurative constructions under the microscope, metaphorically speaking. We use metaphors all the time, especially those of us with poetic souls. But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Juliet is the sun. Like the sun, Juliet brings warmth into my life. Juliet lights up my day like the sun. Juliet illuminates my darkness, shows me the way, pours golden blessings upon me. But Juliet is the sun. She's put on some weight. So obviously we're talking literal versus symbolic language. Four short words to deliver such a wealth of meaning. Juliet is the sun. I am a star. And I'm walking on air. Jesus walked on water. Did Jesus walk on water literally? Or is walking on water a metaphor symbolic of a life of spirit? Walking on water is an image that's used all over the world. It's found in Hindu and Buddhist stories, in tales of the Egyptian god Horus, and in First Nations stories. Why? Well, because our brains respond to metaphorical images. I could say Horus is very spiritual. Horus lives in a way that seems to bring higher values to mundane activities. Ho-hum. Or I could say Horus walks on water. How easy it is to see in our mind's eye the deity, the hero, the heroine walking on water. To remember that mythic image. The poet A.E. Housman defines poetry as words that affect us physically, that find their way to something deep inside that is obscure and latent, something older than the present organization of ourselves. Words that find their way to something deep inside. Something obscure and latent. This reminds us that Freud and Jung both felt that myth is grounded in the unconscious, that our lives are much deeper and broader than we consciously conceive them to be. When we experience this depth, we suddenly understand that that experience is what all religions of the world are talking about. And they're talking about it in the language of poetry, of metaphor. Again, one of our six sources, wisdom from the world's religious and spiritual teachings, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. During my life, I've been inspired by a number of symbolic images from various religions, and I've incorporated many of them into the songs on my CD. These are images that, because of our common human experience, resonate with millions of people all over the world. Inspiring images. Images that we can visualize. Images from my Christian upbringing, as well as my Buddhist, goddess, Hindu, and pagan studies, explorations, and experiences. One of the songs I wrote is called Ocean Mother, one of my favorite metaphors. In this metaphor, I'm not a star. I'm a wave that's finite in space and time, and at my age, sees the beach coming toward me with alarming rapidity. I'm separate from all you other waves, and there's a fundamental aloneness that comes with life in a body, however often we're surrounded by family and friends. And there is a fear of death, of ultimate separation. But at the same time I'm a wave, I'm also the embodiment of ocean, which is infinite and eternal. I am the embodiment of eternity. Most of my time I spend forgetting that I'm the embodiment of ocean, and I'm caught in the illusion of separateness. This is basic Buddhism and Hinduism. When I let go of my attachment to my separateness and remember, not dismember, who I really am, then I'm connected to all of you, to all that is, and I am home. Love, compassion, is the fruit of this experience, which elicits in me a profound gratitude. In one of our Unitarian sources, we are challenged to change the world through compassion, through the transforming power of love. Metaphorically speaking, compassion is personified in various forms. Christ, Mother Mary, the Paraclete, the Bodhisattva, Guan Yin, Avalokiteshvara, Sri Hanuman, Earth Mother, love personified. The scholar Joseph Campbell says that the images of myth are reflections of the spiritual potentialities of every one of us, and that through contemplating these metaphorical images, we evoke their powers in our own lives. These inspiring images that embed themselves in the right inferior frontal gyrus. Through contemplating these images, we can change our negative habits of mind. We can evoke their powers. One way to contemplate these symbolic images and evoke their powers from within our own psyches is through prayer. Wikipedia, a web-based dictionary which some would describe as our 21st century sacred text, says that prayer may involve the use of song, and that prayer may be directed towards a deity or a lofty idea. The Sanskrit word japa refers to a type of prayer and meditation. It is repetition of the holy name, however you define it, a way to elicit our own potential power. We can repeat the name of a deity, the personification, or we can name the power itself, for instance, repeating the word love or peace as a prayer. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. We're constantly meditating on something, however mundane. We're thinking about money, chores, how peeved we are at politicians. Neurologists have a saying, the neurons that fire together wire together. So how can we leave the shallow end, the superficiality of wave consciousness that goes in whichever direction the prevailing wind is blowing? Repeatedly invoking our deepest wisdom through prayer, meditation, song is a way to train the brain to change consciousness. The songs I've written, however fun or lighthearted some of them may be, help me to remember my own true Buddha, Christ, Goddess nature. The songs use mythic images from various religions. Some songs contain a dollop of devotion, some the concept of mastery or the concept of mercy. They all use metaphor. Some songs are an expression of profound gratitude. I feel deep gratitude for the grace of being alive and able to experience rapture. Rumi, the Sufi poet, says, "The sea is in love with the droplet." I might add, "The wave is in love with the ocean." But if the wave and the ocean are two, how can they be one? Reading from Joseph Campbell. Ramakrishna says, "When you behold God, you are not God. There is a pane of glass between. How can we break through? We need to move beyond the pairs of opposites. Halaj, the great Sufi mystic, says the situation is like that of a moth seeing at night a lantern, and she wants to get to the flame. But the glass keeps her out. She batters herself all night long and then goes to her friends in the morning and tells them what a wonderful thing she has just seen. They say, "You don't look the better for it." This is the condition of the yogi, the ascetic, knocking himself to pieces to break through. The moth goes back the next night and, by luck or device, does break through. For an instant, she has achieved her goal and is the flame. That instant is an eternal instant beyond time and space. Halaj is talking about breaking through the illusion that I'm only a wave. He's talking about experiencing ocean, the place where we are one. The Upanishads say, when, before the beauty of a sunset or a mountain, you pause and exclaim, "Ah," you are participating in divinity. To see the world in a grain of sand, heaven in a wildflower. To experience the infinite web of life, of which we are all a part. To see divinity everywhere. I'd like to close with a poem from the mystic Hafiz, as quoted in our hymnal. He refers to this experience of the moth finding the flame, of the wave experiencing ocean, as being in the presence of the beloved. When he talks about the one of which we are all a part, he uses the image, the metaphor, of beloved presence. He says, "Cloak yourself in a thousand ways. Still shall I know you, beloved. Veil yourself with every enchantment, and yet I shall feel you. I shall salute you in the springing of cypresses, and in the sheen of lakes, the laughter of fountains. I shall surely see you in tumbling clouds, in brightly embroidered meadows. O beloved presence, more beautiful than all the stars together, I trace your face in the clear arch of sky. You are the breathing of the world."